Chapter 106. Containing some romantic passages between Mrs. Nickleby and the gentleman in the small clothes next door. Ever since her last momentous conversation with her son, Mrs. Nickleby had begun to display unusual care in the adornment of her person, gradually superadding to those staid and matronly habiliments which had, up to that time, formed her ordinary attire, a variety of embellishments and decorations, slight perhaps in themselves, but, taken together, and considered with reference to the subject of her disclosure, of no mean importance. Even her black dress assumed something of a deadly lively air from the jaunty style in which it was worn, and, eked out as its lingering attractions were, by a prudent disposal, here and there, of certain juvenile ornaments of little or no value, which had, for that reason alone, escaped the general wreck, and been permitted to slumber peacefully in odd corners of old drawers and boxes where daylight seldom shone, her mourning garments assumed quite a new character. From being the outward tokens of respect and sorrow for the dead, they became converted into signals of very slaughterous and killing designs upon the living. Mrs. Nickleby might have been stimulated to this proceeding by a lofty sense of duty, and impulses of unquestionable excellence. She might, by this time, have become impressed with the sinfulness of long indulgence in unavailing woe, or the necessity of setting a proper example of neatness and decorum to her blooming daughter. Considerations of duty and responsibility apart, the change might have taken its rise in feelings of the purest and most disinterested charity. The gentleman next door had been vilified by Nicholas, rudely stigmatized as a dotard and an idiot. And for these attacks upon his understanding, Mrs. Nickleby was, in some sort, accountable. She might have felt that it was the act of a good Christian to show by all means in her power that the abused gentleman was neither the one nor the other. And what better means could she adopt toward so virtuous and laudable an end than proving to all men, in her own person, that his passion was the most rational and reasonable in the world, and just the very result, of all others, which discreet and thinking persons might have foreseen, from her incautiously displaying her matured charms, without reserve, under the very eye, as it were, of an ardent, and too susceptible man. Ah! ' said Mrs. Nickleby, gravely shaking her head. If Nicholas knew what his poor dear papa suffered, before we were engaged, when I used to hate him, he would have a little more feeling. Shall I ever forget the morning I looked scornfully at him, when he offered to carry my parasol? Or that night, when I frowned at him? It was a mercy he didn't emigrate. It very nearly drove him to it. Whether the deceased might not have been better off if he had emigrated in his bachelor days, was a question which his relic did not stop to consider. For Kate entered the room, with her workbox, in this stage of her reflections, and a much slighter interruption, or no interruption at all, would have diverted Mrs. Nickleby's thoughts into a new channel at any time. "Kate, my dear," said Mrs. Nickleby, "I don't know how it is, but a fine warm summer day like this, with the birds singing in every direction, always puts me in mind of roast pig, with sage and onion sauce, and made gravy." That's a curious association of ideas, is it not, Mama? Upon my word, my dear, I don't know, replied Mrs. Nickleby. "Roast pig. Let me see. On the day 5 weeks after you were christened, we had a roast." "No, that couldn't have been a pig either, because I recollect there were a pair of them to carve, and your poor papa and I could never have thought of sitting down to two pigs. They must have been partridges." "Roast pig? I hardly think we ever could have had one, now I come to remember, for your papa could never bear the sight of them in the shops, and used to say that they always put him in mind of very little babies. Only the pigs had much fairer complexions, and he had a horror of little babies, too, because he couldn't very well afford any interest to his family, and had a natural dislike to the subject. It's very odd now, what can have put that in my head? I recollect dining once at Mrs. Bevan's, in that broad street round the corner by the coachmaker's, where the tipsy man fell through the cellar flap of an empty house nearly a week before the quarter day, and wasn't found till the new tenant went in, and we had roast pig there. It must be that, I think, that reminds me of it, especially as there was a little bird in the room, that would keep on singing all the time of dinner at least, not a little bird, for it was a parrot, and he didn't sing exactly, for he talked and swore dreadfully. But I think it must be that. Indeed I am sure it must. Shouldn't you say so, my dear? Apostrophe, I should say there was not a doubt about it, Mama, apostrophe returned Kate, with a cheerful smile. No, but do you think so, Kate? Apostrophe, said Mrs. Nickleby, with as much gravity, as if it were a question of the most imminent and thrilling interest. If you don't, say so at once, you know, because it's just as well to be correct, particularly on a point of this kind, which is very curious and worth settling, while one thinks about it. Apostrophe, Kate laughingly replied, that she was quite convinced, and as her mama still appeared undetermined, whether it was not absolutely essential, that the subject should be renewed, proposed that they should take their work into the summer house, and enjoy the beauty of the afternoon. Mrs. Nickleby readily assented, and to the summer house they repaired, without further discussion. Well, I will say, apostrophe observed Mrs. Nickleby, as she took her seat, that there never was such a good creature as Smike. Upon my word, the pains he has taken in putting this little arbor to rights, and training the sweetest flowers about it, are beyond anything I could have. I wish he wouldn't put all the gravel on your side, Kate, my dear, though, and leave nothing but mold for me. Apostrophe, dear mama, apostrophe returned Kate, hastily, take this seat do to oblige me, mama. Apostrophe, no, indeed, my dear. I shall keep my own side, apostrophe said Mrs. Nickleby. Well, I declare, apostrophe, Kate looked up inquiringly. If he hasn't been, apostrophe said Mrs. Nickleby, and got, from somewhere or other, a couple of roots of those flowers, that I said I was so fond of, the other night, and asked you, if you were not, no, that you said you were so fond of, the other night, and asked me, if I wasn't, it's the same thing. Now, upon my word, I take that as very kind and attentive indeed. I don't see, apostrophe added Mrs. Nickleby, looking narrowly about her, any of them on my side, but I suppose they grow best near the gravel. You may depend upon it they do, Kate, and that's the reason they are all near you, and he has put the gravel there, because it's the sunny side. Upon my word, that's very clever now. I shouldn't have had half as much thought myself. Apostrophe, mama, apostrophe said Kate, bending over her work, so that her face was almost hidden, before you were married, apostrophe, dear me, Kate, apostrophe interrupted Mrs. Nickleby, what in the name of goodness graciousness makes you fly off to the time, before I was married, when I'm talking to you about his thoughtfulness and attention to me? You don't seem to take the smallest interest in the garden. Apostrophe, oh. Mama, apostrophe said Kate, raising her face again, you know I do. Apostrophe, well then, my dear, why don't you praise the neatness and prettiness with which it's kept? Apostrophe said Mrs. Nickleby. How very odd you are, Kate. Apostrophe, I do praise it, mama, apostrophe answered Kate, gently. Poor fellow. Apostrophe, I scarcely ever hear you, my dear, apostrophe retorted Mrs. Nickleby, that's all I've got to say. Apostrophe, by this time the good lady had been a long while upon one topic, so she fell at once into her daughter's little trap, if trap it were, and inquired what she had been going to say. About what, mama? Apostrophe said Kate, who had apparently quite forgotten her diversion. Lore. Kate, my dear, apostrophe returned her mother, why, you're asleep or stupid. About the time, before I was married. Apostrophe, oh yes. Apostrophe said Kate, I remember. I was going to ask, Mama, before you were married, had you many suitors? Apostrophe, apostrophe, suitors, my dear. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Nickleby, with a smile of wonderful complacency. First and last, Kate, I must have had a dozen at least. Apostrophe, mamma. Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned Kate, in a tone of remonstrance. I had indeed, my dear, apostrophe, said Mrs. Nickleby, not including your poor papa, or a young gentleman who used to go, at that time, to the same dancing school, and who would send gold watches and bracelets to our house in gilt-edged paper, which were always returned, and who afterwards unfortunately went out to Botany Bay in a cadet ship, a convict ship I mean, and escaped into a bush and killed sheep, I don't know how they got there, and was going to be hung, only he accidentally choked himself, and the government pardoned him. Then there was young Lucan, apostrophe said Mrs. Nickleby, beginning with her left thumb and checking off the names on her fingers, Mogley Tipslark Cabri Smithser apostrophe, having now reached her little finger, Mrs. Nickleby was carrying the account over to the other hand, when a loud hem, apostrophe apostrophe, which appeared to come from the very foundation of the garden wall, gave both herself and her daughter a violent start. Mama, what was that? Apostrophe said Kate, in a low tone of voice. Upon my word, my dear, apostrophe returned Mrs. Nickleby, considerably startled, unless it was the gentleman belonging to the next house, I don't know what it could possibly apostrophe, ahem. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the same voice, and that, not in the tone of an ordinary clearing of the throat, but in a kind of bellow, which woke up all the echoes in the neighborhood, and was prolonged to an extent which must have made the unseen bellower quite black in the face. I understand it now, my dear, apostrophe said Mrs. Nickleby, laying her hand on Kate's. Don't be alarmed, my love, it's not directed to you, and is not intended to frighten anybody. Let us give everybody their due, Kate, I am bound to say that. Apostrophe, so saying, Mrs. Nickleby nodded her head, and patted the back of her daughter's hand, a great many times, and looked as if she could tell something vastly important if she chose, but had self-denial, thank heaven, and wouldn't do it. What do you mean, Mama? Apostrophe, apostrophe, demanded Kate, in evident surprise. Don't be flurried, my dear, apostrophe, replied Mrs. Nickleby, looking towards the garden wall, for you see I'm not, and if it would be excusable in anybody to be flurried, it certainly would under all the circumstances be excusable in me, but I am not, Kate, not at all. Apostrophe, it seems designed to attract our attention, Mama, apostrophe, said Kate. It is designed to attract our attention, my dear. At least, apostrophe, rejoined Mrs. Nickleby, drawing herself up, and patting her daughter's hand more blandly than before, to attract the attention of one of us. Hem. You needn't be at all uneasy, my dear. Apostrophe, Kate looked very much perplexed, and was apparently about to ask for further explanation, when a shouting and scuffling noise, as of an elderly gentleman whooping, and kicking up his legs on loose gravel, with great violence, was heard to proceed from the same direction as the former sounds, and before they had subsided, a large cucumber was seen to shoot up in the air with the velocity of a skyrocket, whence it descended, tumbling over and over, until it fell at Mrs. Nickleby's feet. This remarkable appearance was succeeded by another of a precisely similar description. Then a fine vegetable marrow, of unusually large dimensions, was seen to whirl aloft, and come toppling down. Then, several cucumbers shot up together, and, finally, the air was darkened by a shower of onions, turnip radishes, and other small vegetables, which fell rolling and scattering, and bumping about, in all directions. As Kate rose from her seat, in some alarm, and caught her mother's hand to run with her into the house, she felt herself rather retarded than assisted in her intention, and following the direction of Mrs. Nickleby's eyes, was quite terrified by the apparition of an old black velvet cap, which, by slow degrees, as if its wearer were ascending a ladder or pair of steps, rose above the wall dividing their garden from that of the next cottage, which, like their own, was a detached building, and was gradually followed by a very large head, and an old face, in which were a pair of most extraordinary gray eyes. Very wild, very wide open, and rolling in their sockets, with a dull, languishing, leering look, most ugly to behold. Mama! ! Cried Kate, really terrified for the moment. Why do you stop? Why do you lose an instant? Mama, pray come in. Kate, my dear, returned her mother, still holding back. How can you be so foolish? I'm ashamed of you. How do you suppose you are ever to get through life, if you're such a coward as this? What do you want, sir? Said Mrs. Nickleby, addressing the intruder with a sort of simpering displeasure. How dare you look into this garden? Queen of my soul, replied the stranger, folding his hands together, this goblet sip. Nonsense, sir, said Mrs. Nickleby. Kate, my love, pray be quiet. Won't you sip the goblet? Urged the stranger, with his head imploringly on one side, and his right hand on his breast. Oh, do sip the goblet. I shall not consent to do anything of the kind, sir, said Mrs. Nickleby. Pray, beggin. Why is it, said the old gentleman, coming up a step higher, and leaning his elbows on the wall, with as much complacency, as if he were looking out of window, why is it that beauty is always obdurate, even when admiration is as honorable, and respectful as mine? Here he smiled, kissed his hand, and made several low bows. Is it owing to the bees, who, when the honey season is over, and they are supposed to have been killed with brimstone, in reality fly to Barbary and lull the captive moors, to sleep with their drowsy songs? Or is it, he added, dropping his voice almost to a whisper, in consequence of the statue at Charing Cross, having been lately seen, on the Stock Exchange at midnight, walking arm in arm with the pump from Aldgate, in a riding habit? Mama, murmured Kate, do you hear him? Hush, my dear. Replied Mrs. Nickleby, in the same tone of voice, he is very polite, and I think that was a quotation from the poets. Pray, don't worry me, so you'll pinch my arm black and blue. Go away, sir. Quite away? Said the gentleman, with a languishing look. Oh, quite away? Yes, returned Mrs. Nickleby, certainly. You have no business here. This is private property, sir. You ought to know that. I do know, said the old gentleman, laying his finger on his nose, with an air of familiarity, most reprehensible, that this is a sacred and enchanted spot, where the most divine charms here. He kissed his hand, and bowed again with mellifluousness over the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.